Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Racine Art Museum is now featuring a new exhibit, Someone's Cup of Tea, Contemporary Teapots, from Ram's Collection. Open each Wednesday through Saturday from noon to 4, August 7th through July 2021. Visit ramart.org.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW-Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters. Our topic today is services for LGBTQ and IA plus persons from the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin. My guests are Barb Frauer, Executive Director, and Carl Hubbard, President of the Board of Directors of the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin. Good morning to you both.
Yes, good morning,
Lynn. Barb, as Executive Director of the LGBT Center, please give us an overview of your vital services for persons in the signal area of this radio station, which is Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties, and the northeastern part of Lake County. Tell us, from the 80,000-foot level, what the center does, please.
Sure. Thank you again, Lynn, for having us on. The center is really about building community and supporting people in the LGBTQ plus community. And our mission is to empower Southeast Wisconsin to create a safe and inclusive home for LGBTQ communities. So high level, what we do is we provide advocacy for individuals and on a state and national level. We provide safe zone training, support groups, programming for youth and elders, and events like social events and learning events, and we provide walk-in services for those in crisis.
That's so terrific, and I imagine you've made some adjustments because of the COVID-19 pandemic. You want to give us an overview of that?
Yeah, sure. With social distancing and still trying to reinvent our playbook about how we best keep our staff and clients safe, we have gone fully virtual, so everything we're doing right now is virtual. All of our support groups, our safe zone training, and the advocacy work is done virtually as well. In addition, we've added a 24-hour phone support hotline, so you just call the main number of the center, which is 262-664-4100, and it will be routed to a staff person.
That's great, and that's something relatively new, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's super. Now, I'd like to get into something that's been in the news, and I want to note that we're recording this on September 2nd, two Saturdays before broadcast, so if we don't mention something that's been in the news recently, it's because we can't see into the future. I'll try to get guests who can do that better, but it's really hard to find people who can see a week and a half into the future. So let's talk about what we do know about transgender services, and what do we mean by transgender services, and what are the issues involved in our area? And particularly, I understand that there's been some attention on ordinances regarding transgender services in the city of Kenosha with respect to the schools and respect to the city generally. So I wonder if you would give us an overview of that and what that's all about. Barb?
Sure. Transgender folks, this is really an equality issue, and it's an equity issue. It's a human rights issue. And so when somebody identifies as trans or transgender, what we're really supporting are ordinances, laws, rules, practices that support someone who was born with a certain biology and identifies their gender in that's different from their biological sex at birth. And it's important that these people, that trans folks have recognition of their name in a classroom, and that they can use the bathroom of their choice, and that they are treated with respect and protected under bullying laws throughout school districts and within the cities.
And of course, your interest applies also outside of the school system as well, does it not?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, now, last year in the city of Racine, we passed, or actually 2 years ago, we passed an ordinance supporting gender identity for people who live and work in Racine.
You want to talk a little bit more about what the issues are with respect to transgender folks that the center has seen in the past and discuss the nature of them a little bit so people can understand a little bit what we're talking about here? Carl, would you like to add in or Barb continue?
Yes. We are aware that the issues that are facing transgender and gender nonconforming people in Wisconsin are challenging. Barb mentioned that there are transgender protections in place in the city of Racine. That is not the case for most of the state of Wisconsin. Our state does have laws that protect sexual orientation. Those laws currently do not include transgender people, so in many portions of the state, they are vulnerable to discrimination in housing, discrimination in employment, and vulnerability to violence. And that is not just in the state of Wisconsin. As of last week, there were 28 transgender people murdered in the United States, one as recently as a week ago. This is an alarming trend. In 2019, there were 26 transgender people who were victims of lethal violence. Already this year, 7 months into 2020, we have exceeded that number of murders with 28 people. As far as the protections for housing and employment, we have progressive legislators in the state of Wisconsin who have included transgender protections in the equality agenda promoted by Representative Greta Neubauer and other progressive representatives at the state level. To date, they have not been successful in getting that agenda passed.
That's very, very serious stuff, isn't it?
It is.
We're talking about some of the basic issues in a person's life here. Now, Barb, I wonder if you would discuss a little bit, and Carl, yourself as well. There's a vocabulary issue that when we talk about this population. And I think that we ought to underscore the fact that the disparity and the violence against Black and other persons of color is startlingly high and disproportional. Go ahead, Barb and Carl.
You are right, Lynn, that the violence against people of color is startlingly high. I mentioned a minute ago that there were 26 people last year and 28 people this year who have been victims of murder. 97% of those people have been African-American transgender women. That is an alarming and tragic statistic that we have to deal with. It is at this point only going to get better through education, through making efforts to get legislation and local ordinances passed that will extend the protections that are currently offered in about 8 cities to the entire state.
Well, I don't want to be overly dramatic, and I certainly don't, I'm not the kind of person who sensationalizes, but that is literally life and death issues here. Barb, please.
Yeah, sure. And I wanted to address just a little background about the vocabulary that you had talked about. So, you know, when I was coming out in the 80s, it was really lesbians and gays. And then there was some controversy around people who are bisexual, and then it became LGB. Well, in the 90s is when trans and trans rights really started to kick off. And for those folks who don't really know what it means to be transgender, it means that that, like I said, you're born with a biology that doesn't match the gender that you identify with. So that's somebody who's maybe born with male genitalia who identifies as a female. That's a trans woman. Somebody who's born as a female who identifies as male is a trans man. And for those people who were born with the same biology that matches their identity, it's called a cis person, C-I-S, cisgender man or a cisgender woman, which has nothing to do with sexual orientation, but all about gender identity.
I wonder if you would continue by talking about the phenomenon we see and advocated by most human development services organizations of putting your pronouns after your name. I bet people are seeing that on their email, and I have a feeling not everybody knows what that's about. It's an important issue. You want to talk about that, Carl?
Yes, those pronouns are important because they are the true identifier chosen by the individual who goes by those pronouns. People are prone to misgender individuals, not in an aggressive or negative way, but basically out of ignorance. So having those pronouns available is an indicator of the most respectful and inclusive way you can reference that person when you are talking to them. People do not want to be identified by what we sometimes call their dead names and their dead pronouns. They want you to refer to them and interact with them in a way that respects the way they have defined their identity. That is the importance of those pronouns.
You could summarize it maybe by saying, I have a right to be me, and you have a right to be you.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of services are you providing that are relevant in this regard, Barb, at the LGBT Center of Southeast Wisconsin?
Sure. We provide several support groups. We have a transgender group that meets weekly, and we have what we call an umbrella group, which is really a way for people of all different stripes, so to speak, to get together and talk. It's more of a social group. I would say that we also provide one-on-one counseling if somebody is wanting resources about maybe they're considering making a transition, and that can be a quick process for some and a very slow process for others. We can provide them to medical facilities, therapists, if that's necessary, and to the community at large to help them with their transition. We also have people who work on staff who are trans and people in the community, and we can create an environment in which people can ask a lot of questions in a very safe place. And we also talk to families as well.
Anything you want to add, Carl?
Yes, there is a distinction that I would like to make that may clarify this term transgender. I have been asked on, boy, numerous occasions, I watch RuPaul's Drag Race. Are those transgender people? They are not. Those are men who are impersonating female personalities. They may or may not be gay people. They are not transgender people. They are entertainers, what we used to call female impersonators. People also confuse the term transvestite with the term transgender. Transvestite is a reference to someone whose preference is to sometimes wear clothing of the opposite sex. When we are talking about transgender, we're talking about core identity issues of an individual. And those are two different things.
Yeah, and a word that keeps coming up is binary and non-binary. So in the binary, it's male and female, and it's really recognizing that you are, or making a kind of a judgment almost, that you are either male or female, and there is no other type of gender in between. And part of the trans revolution, or the gender nonconforming revolution, is that now we see people that don't identify as male or female, but somewhere in between. So terms like gender fluid, somebody who kind of comes as they choose between their maleness and their femaleness and are somewhere on a spectrum in between. Or somebody who doesn't identify with gender, they identify as not male or not female, and they may identify as gender nonconforming. And often they use a pronoun like they, and they comes from a kind of a plural. I am both or neither, and that's hard for some people to kind of get their head around because we're used to he and she.
But it's perfectly good English. I'm talking today on Community Matters with the top people at the LGBT Center of Southeastern Wisconsin, Barb Frar, Executive Director, and Carl Hubbard, President of the Board of Directors on the LGBT Center. And as Carl knows, I was President of the Board of Directors quite a long time ago. I sort of timed out after serving the maximum number of terms, and in my old age, I'm doing other things, but still financially supportive. I think it would be a mistake for me not to note that when I first got involved in the LGBTQIA plus civil rights movement, it was an About 1970, 71. It was soon after the Stonewall Uprising. And if it hadn't been for transgender folks, that might never have happened. And so they have a very special place in the gay community, if you know anything about your history. Isn't that right, Carl?
It is. And the history of violence that I referred to earlier continues from the time of Stonewall. You are no doubt familiar, Lynn, with Marsha P. Johnson, who was a big leader in the Stonewall Revolution and the civil rights activities that occurred after that. Even a person with that much public stature and awareness has been found murdered in the Hudson River in New York years ago. That is yet another unsolved death of a transgender person. Tragic, and this needs to come to an end.
I was at a meeting on the subject of Black equity, inclusion, and diversity in Milwaukee, kind of a community forum about a year ago. And I was especially impressed that the youngest members of the audience from the human development services professions were very, very keen and aware of issues of intersexuality. In our case for this discussion, the intersexuality between being Black and a person of color and being in the LGBT spectrum. Any comment from either of you on that? Intersectionality is a word that most people probably haven't heard much about.
Yeah, intersectionality is a beautiful word. It takes into account, you know, socioeconomic status, LGBT status, race, religion, and we find that there are ways in which we literally come together and intersect and have experiences that are similar, even though we're often very different.
And also, it also helps to make people aware of the levels of oppression that intersectionality suggests. You can be African American, you can be poor, you can be gay, you can be lesbian, you can be a single mom with children. All of those things might apply to one individual, and they may have to deal with all those challenges simultaneously, and that is quite a challenge.
Barb, as executive director, you have presided over a wonderful redesign of your website. I believe it has a nice mobile version as well, and it does a great job of getting people connected with you. You want to tell people how to get to that website?
Sure. It's www.lgbtsewi.org.
One more time, please.
excuse me. www.lgbtsewi.org. And we received a wonderful capacity building grant last year from CenterLink, which is an organization that supports LGBT centers across the country. We received a very large $50,000 grant to help us get the word out about our center, to improve our communications, and to do a needs assessment.
Yes, I congratulated you at the time, and I don't know, but I think that's the largest grant that the center has ever received. Is that right, Barb?
That's right.
So you and your team, my hat is off to you. Congratulations. You're doing God's work. I'd like to turn now to some of the other services, unless you want to continue on the transgender topic and have some other things you want to say. Shall we move on?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's take some of the big, bold topics as to what you do. Why don't we go into, oh, by the way, do you have a Facebook page while we're talking about how to, do you have a Facebook page that we could find you on, or a Twitter account, Barb?
Yeah, we have a Twitter and a Instagram and a Facebook page. And you can just Google LGBT or just put in LGBTSEWI.org and we'll come up.
Pops right up. Cool. All right. Now, why don't we tackle advocacy first, okay? Carl, you're the president of the board of directors, so I'm going to start by asking you, within the context of advocacy and the totality of the LGBT Center of Southeast Wisconsin, why it's so important to our community.
It is so important because without advocacy, bluntly put, people don't get a fair shake. People get excluded. They get excluded from jobs. They get excluded from social circles. They get excluded from their own families, from their churches. There are different kinds of advocacy that the center undertakes, supporting people who are victims of crime or violence in the Southeast Wisconsin area who come to us. We try to help them work through the processes of going to court, filing charges, being a support for them. One important aspect of advocacy that we continue to do that you're probably very well aware of is our efforts to get bans on conversion therapy passed as ordinances in cities in this area. We probably need to clarify when we are talking about a conversion therapy ban that what our organization has worked to pass in Racine and is currently beginning to start that work in Kenosha. It is a ban on providing conversion therapy for minors. I don't know if your listening audience is all aware of what conversion therapy is, but briefly put, conversion or reparative therapy is an effort based on a false belief that being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, gender nonconforming is a mental disorder that needs to be fixed. We are aware that none of that is true. Sexual orientation and gender identity are not mental disorders and are not identified as such. Consequently, any effort to force a minor person into efforts to change their identity is considered damaging. This is standard policy, standard position of almost every major psychiatric and psychological association in this country, including the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. The list goes on. There are 22 organizations that provide counseling and support to families who have all roundly condemned this practice is already outlawed in 21 states in our country. We are hoping to get it banned here in Wisconsin. It is another part of the equality agenda that has been proposed at the legislature last year.
I know that the Human Development Services circles that my listeners know I attend to very closely, those that I talk to speak of horribly damaged young people because of these things, this sort of conversion or so-called reparative therapy being practiced on them as minors. And it's really, as the stories I've heard are truly horrifying about the damage that has been done to folks in this way. Barb, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Having worked at the center, I've met some people that you're talking about that have, either through their church or their parents sending them to a private therapist to change who they are, is extremely damaging. It causes anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts often. It forever changes their life, and not in a good way. Often it forces them out of the home into a homeless situation or a couch surfing situation, which just destabilizes them. They may fall out of school or not get the grades that they could have gotten. It really is something that shakes the foundation of who they are, and it's extremely damaging.
Well, you know, we radio folk like to sum things up in a pithy little statement, and one could just say it's another form of child abuse.
I agree with that.
Absolutely is, and has been defined as such.
What other advocacy is the center involved in? I know that's not the only issue that's being faced by our community.
One other aspect of advocacy that we do is a form of education called Safe Zone Awareness Training. We know that a lot of disadvantage that LGBTQ plus people have to face is as a result of ignorance, not ill will. We provide training in the form of, previously in person, now virtual, presentations that help people to understand the kind of terminology that we've discussed here earlier, help them to understand ways in which they can be inclusive in their business environments, towards their employees, suggest to participants in that training ways in which they can be allies and stop homophobic remarks, anti-trans remarks, help to stop bullying if it's in a school environment. That is education as advocacy.
Barb, would you want to continue on that topic?
Oh, absolutely. The Safe Zone training that we provide has been really well received. And we go into some depth. We really tackle vocabulary much more than we have here today. We talk to people about how to be allies, how to use pronouns in a sentence, and really get to the difference between gender identity, biological sex, and sexual orientation, because sometimes those definitions are critical to understand who someone is and some of the situations we've been talking about today. And last year we trained almost 500 people, and I think we went to 24 different agencies across the state. And we continue to offer these now, and you can just call the center. There is a sliding scale fee for that, but it's compared to other diversity and inclusive trainings, very affordable, and we're really eager to reach as many people as we can, even during COVID.
I'll put in a plug for that, and I'll just say that it really sticks in my craw when I see school systems and businesses go drag in people from Milwaukee and Chicago to do the same thing that our local LGBT center can do and throw the money outside of the community instead of supporting you folks there here right in our area. I think that there is a very, very sad tone to that, and I advise the HR people listening, get some training at your organization, no matter what your organization is, no matter what your organization is, and get it from the LGBT Center of Southeast Wisconsin. Don't go dragging in someone from Madison. We don't need professors from Madison to do this. You need to support our own local people. All right, that sermon is over.
Thank you. If I can just add to that, too, one thing that we do, we are a very small center. I'm the only full-time employee. We have a part-time employee. But one thing that we do, and we've got a training staff, Carl, myself, and another staff member, Ray, what we do is we learn what an organization needs, and we customize each of our trainings to that organization. So, for example, we just did one for a housing consortium, and we talked a lot about housing issues for trans people, housing, homeless statistics for LGBT people. So we really make it relevant, and that's something that we just feel like we have to do for our local community.
Well, that's a huge value added. It's what I do in my own consulting practice, which I've pretty much wound down now. And you usually don't get that from an outsider. And if you do, you pay extra for it, and it's really not worth it when you've got the LGBT Center right here. Now, I might also note that you have a vocabulary tab on your webpage, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So I recommend that everybody listening take a look at that. And for the journalists listening, I hope you're aware of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, of which I'm a charter founder. And that organization has a style book. The National Association of Black Journalists has one, too. And if every journalist in this community and within my Signal area doesn't have a copy of the style manual of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association and the Black Journalists Association, and I think that Latinx has one too, you're not practicing your craft correctly, or you're not, can't be sure you are. So get on the stick and use those things, memorize them, and refer to them often. Yes, I do have the credibility to say that. I have 2 degrees in journalism, the Pulitzer School at Columbia University and the Medill School at Northwestern University. So listen, some of the journalists here are doing a great job. I'm not criticizing you all, but some of you don't get it, and it's your responsibility. So do it. Now, sorry for the rants, but hey, I'm calling it as I see it. You have a group called Colorful and Connected. What is that?
So Colorful and Connected was a group that we are still in the process of forming. We've got probably a dozen folks that belong. And it's really for Black and Brown LGBTQ folks to find community, to have social events, learning events together. And right now, we are working towards Get Out the Vote campaign. So sometimes, you know, I am identified as a white person, and I know I have certain privileges. And sometimes coming out in a Black and Brown community can be more difficult, and for a variety of reasons. And so we're trying to provide a safe place for Black and Brown people to come out and find community and get involved and on a local level, make some changes in our community.
That must be so gratifying for people. It must almost be soul lifting to be able to be involved in that work, I would think. What do you say, President Carl?
I think it's crucial work. In addition to the services that Barb just described, it's a really important opportunity for socialization. People who are excluded from their social circles at school or at work, who are Black and Brown, may not have another place to turn. They're often not welcomed in religious settings. So what we want to do with Colorful and Connected is connect. We want them to be aware that here is a facility where you can trust that you will not be judged by the color of your skin, by your sexual orientation, or by any other factor. So without that, there would be a lot of pretty isolated people. We are not in a great big metropolitan city that offers lots of different resources, such as Chicago or Milwaukee or Madison even. So we feel it is up to us to make those opportunities available here within the Southeast Wisconsin area.
That's really terrific. Now, I know you have a lot of youth programs, and those change in response to perceived and stated needs by youth. But you want to tell us a little bit more about other things we're doing with youth at the LGBT Center, Barbara, Executive Director Barbara?
Sure. So I'll be honest, in the time of COVID, it has been hard to bring youth back into the center. And I have found that other organizations are going through that as well. And part of that, I think, is a lack of ability to connect through the schools. I think part of that is being isolated in their own homes. You know, that being said, last year we had a banner year. We had many kids come to the school or come to the center for support groups. And we also received a grant actually from Pottawatomie, Forest County Pottawatomie, to create a youth after school arts program. And we started a three-part series of printmaking, and we got through our first training, and then we had to shut it down for COVID. So we have a grant to take kids up to Kohler to go to tour the facilities and the art museum there, and we just haven't been able to do that. So I feel for youth right now, because I feel like it is an unprecedented time, and organizations like ours aren't able to serve them in the way that we'd like to. So, but I would also say that we serve youth in kind of a roundabout way, because often we get calls from parents who are seeking advice or services or to talk to kids. And we've got some youth that we use as like a outreach connector. So that's working.
Why don't you talk a little bit more about that, folks? Because we often just think about the children or the young adults or maybe the senior citizens, because we have needs too. We can get into that a little bit later. But we don't often think about the services that parents get at a center like this. And that's a little different from a lot of other kinds of human development services, not all, but from a lot. So I wonder if you just dwell on that a little bit. How do you help a parent? What does that
sure.
mean?
One of our support groups is a Parenting with Pride group. It meets every week. It meets Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., and that's open to anybody. Often we get a call, and somebody just wants to talk. My 14-year-old came out as trans, and I don't want to screw him up, which is a beautiful thing. And I get that about once every couple months, somebody says almost exactly that. I am supportive, but I don't know how to be. And so that takes good listening skills. You kind of have to analyze what's going on in the family, in the home, and just make some core recommendations, whether it be reading materials or other parents to talk to. Absolutely, the most important advice we say is just tell your child you love them. Because a kid who hears that they are loved by their parents is going to be so much better off than a kid that's now on the streets because of continuous arguments.
President Carl?
Well, one other point I think worth making is that in those conversations with parents, we provide a valuable counterbalance to negative things that those parents might be hearing. Oh, your child is gay. I'm so sorry. Oh, that must be terrible for you. What are you doing to fix that child? We try to help that parent understand this is the same child you've loved your whole life. It is a matter of understanding a little bit better their identity. There is nothing wrong with them, and there is nothing wrong with you, and you did nothing as a parent to negatively influence your child to become gay. That is a big misconception. What did I do? Where did I go wrong? We try to encourage parents to think you didn't go wrong, and you're now here talking to us. That's a clear indication that you're going right.
Yeah, that's like whining over the fact that your kid has blue instead of gray eyes. That makes about as much sense. Truthfully, doesn't it? Now, you have a group called Rockstar Legends. Do you have a lot of old rock stars there at the center? And where do you keep them? How does that work?
So Rockstar Legends has been around for some time, and it's actually led by a Dominican nun who happens to be on our board of directors, and she has a group that meets twice a month on Saturdays, and it's for elders, and that's considered anybody over 40, really. And so we have probably about 15 people that regularly attend, and we have everything from travelogues to presentations from outside people, experts in their field, to just a Christmas party where people get together and exchange gifts. We know if somebody is going through something in that group, like maybe a health issue, and so we provide support if needed and wanted. It's just a really great social environment.
And there's a group called Free to Be, a Spiritual Journey. What is that? Carl, do you want to pick that up?
That is a conversation that happens every Monday at 7 p.m. It is an effort for the LGBTQ community and its allies to discuss the relationship between the Christian religion and the LGBTQ community. As you know, there are lots of messages sent out from pulpits that seek to suggest that being a gay person is somehow inherently a sinful, shameful thing to be. That mindset, when it is repeated weekly from a church pulpit, can have very damaging effects on young people and also on the adults who parent young people. We try to have conversations within the spirituality group that help people to better connect to their faith and to each other through their faith. And it's an interesting and very affirming group.
Barb, you also have some fun groups, and you do things together with all the groups, but I want to focus, if you could briefly tell me, what is the ACERS on your webpage? It says ACERS. What's that?
Yeah, so ACERS refer to people who are ace or asexual. And when you think about the LGBTQ plus, A is for asexual folks. So these are people that may have, it's kind of an awakening to realize that you're not sexually attracted to anyone. So you're not really gay or lesbian. You just are who you are. You may have romantic relationships, which means you like to hold hands or just be with a specific person and you love them, but you may not be interested in sex. And so that's a solid group that meets once a week as well.
How can the public help the LGBT Center of Southeast Wisconsin? I'm going to go to Barb first and then to President Carl.
Sure. Well, we are always interested in people who would like to volunteer at the center, whether that be to help us clean up the facility one day or to host a house party and invite their friends. And, you know, all of this is kind of pre-COVID and hopefully post-COVID. But you can always write us a check. We would never decline that.
You are a 501c3 organization. Gifts are fully tax deductible as provided by law. And there are some wonderful things in the tax code, especially for 2020. Everybody gets a top of the line adjustment to their adjusted gross income of $300. Talk to your CPA or tax advisor if you haven't figured out how you're going to spend that, in essence, free $300 deduction. You ought to think about it. And there are other things that you can do with your IRA this year. I hope people will think about it. Tell me, Carl, what is your wish for the center in the future? What is your wish?
My wish for the center is that it continue to grow and expand its services and outreach. The growth that we enjoy today is a result of work that people like yourself did to move the center forward to the point it is today. We would like to continue expanding our capacity to serve and educate the Southeastern Wisconsin community, and also to be able to provide fun things like a gala, like the equality prom for high school kids, like the family picnic. Those are things that have been derailed at this point because of COVID. We'd like to be able to have those things again, and when we have them, we need your support.